It is my very great pleasure and fortune to be amongst all of you today. My special gratitude to Ajay and Swati and Urvi and Lalita Devi, Anand, and all the family for allowing me to participate in this very auspicious event. We have just entered into the new year of 2005. New Year is a time when people who are thoughtful, they contemplate what they have done in the past, where they stand now, and what their real values and goals are for the future. Today we are inaugurating this very beautiful office building. I have just had a tour, very expert tour by Mr. Gupte, who explained to me how it is the goal of the organization that through the leadership, values, integrity, morality, as well as hard work in a spirit of compassion can be generated through all of the employees and the work that is done. It is a wonderful example how the Piramo family are inaugurating their enterprise in the building that is containing it by inviting religious sadhus to perform yajna, kirtan, to invoke the blessings of God. This is a very important example. Bhagavad Gita explains the greatest illusion is for humankind to think that they are independent of the gracious blessings of the Supreme Lord. It is the Lord who provides the sunshine, the air, the earth, which provides everything, our food, our clothing, and whatever we can manufacture, we are simply taking them from the earth, from what God provides, and trying to transform them with an intelligence and a body that God has provided into something that can be utilized for the benefit of humanity. So to acknowledge our dependence on the Supreme Lord in a spirit of making a resolution to live in harmony with the plan and the laws of God, that is auspicious beginning. Actually, life is endless beginnings at every moment. Every moment is a beginning for something that we are creating for the future. And according to this great Vedic culture, and for that matter, all real cultures throughout the world, throughout history, nothing can be auspicious without invoking the blessings of the Lord and our seniors. I have seen in traditional Indian families, when the children rise in the morning, they offer their respects in various ways to their parents, to their grandparents, and ask for blessings. This is very proper. According to the scriptures, any serious endeavor can only really be auspicious if we first invoke the blessings of the Lord. And how do we invoke the blessings of the Lord? Through those who love the Lord. There are many examples. I would like to give a few. In Sri Ramayana, Valmiki Muni explains how Vishwamitra Muni, who is a simple sadhu living in forest, only wearing tree bark, he came to the palace of Dasarath. Dasarath Maharaj was the king of the Koshal dynasty. Very powerful, very wealthy, huge militaries, and his whole kingdom, every citizen was loyal, faithful, with love toward him. Have you heard of any type of kingdom like that today? If there was Dasarath Maharajas, we would have that today. He had that capacity. He treated every single one of his citizens, not only humans, but all living beings within his kingdom, as his own praja, as his own children. He really cared about them. He loved them. He felt responsibility for them. That is leadership in its highest sense. But even though he had such power, such wealth, and such influence, still, when this Muni came from the forest, Dasarath Maharaj bowed to him, washed his feet, and then put the sage on his own throne and told him, "Everything is yours. How can I serve you? Whatever way you like me to serve you, I will serve you." Vishwamitra Muni, "Oh, are you serious?" "Of course I'm serious. I want to take your son Ram with me." There was nothing more difficult. "Why do you want? He's only 16 years old." He said, "There are mighty Rakshasa Asuras in the forest. I need him to fight against them." Dasarath Maharaj was not thinking Ram is God. He was thinking he's my son. He hasn't even finished his lessons in military arts yet. He hasn't even graduated from his schooling. How can you take him now? He said, "Leave Ram here. I will go with all my military, with all my armies. You can have my whole kingdom. You can have anything, but not Ram. He's my life, my soul, my everything." Vishwamitra Muni said, "You have given your word. And for an honorable person, their word is more precious than everything else, including their very life." So this is leadership. Dasarath gave Ram to keep his word to the sage. And then Ram went to the forest with Lakshman. And they came to the Siddhashram, the place of the residence of Vishwamitra. They were performing a yajna like this for the welfare of all humanity. These great sages were not performing yajna for any material gain for themselves. They were trying to actually invoke the blessings of God for the auspicious welfare of all humanity. So as they were performing this yajna, at the appropriate time, the two asuras, Subahu and his friend, appeared. They were powerful. And what did Ram do? In a humble position, he went before Vishwamitra Muni, who was a great sage. And he said, "Now, please give me your order." And Vishwamitra Muni said, "Send these criminals away." And Ram touched the feet of Vishwamitra and begged for his blessings. And with the blessings of the great sage, Sri Ram began his Kshatriya duties. It was the first time in his life, in his Leela, that he actually took up his bow to go against the Asuras. He did it with humility, seeking the blessings of his superiors. He's the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Lord of all creation. Does he need anyone's blessings? But to teach the world, he lived by this principle and showed us, afterward, Vishwamitra Muni led them to Mithila, which is today known as Janakpur. And there he met Maharaj Janak and saw this great bow, the bow of Lord Shankar. And to take the hand of Sita in marriage would require someone who could lift the bow and string it. And the most powerful heroes in all of the world, they could not even separate the bow from the altar it sat on. Very powerful. Sita had already given her heart to Ram, and Ram had already given his heart to Sita, and Janak has already in his heart given the hand of Sita to Ram in marriage. It was absolute silence as Ram entered into the stadium and approached the altar of the bow. And what did he do? He went to Vishwamitra Muni and touched his feet and said, "Please give me your blessings." Vishwamitra Muni gave his blessings to Ram, and then Ram lifted the bow and broke it. It sounded much louder than that. The whole three worlds trembled. Again, Sri Ramchandra would not perform that deed or accept Sita as his wife without first humbling himself to receive the auspicious blessings and directions from his superiors, from a sadhu. This is actual culture. Culture is something very deep and very real, especially the great culture of the Indian civilization. Today in Kali Yuga, oftentimes we see form without substance. Like Lord Jesus in the Bible told the Pharisees, "You understand very well the letter of the law of God, but you do not understand the spirit and the power behind it." It is all important to go through motions without the proper attitude is a type of hypocrisy. I have a friend from Germany. His father was an officer in the Nazi army under Hitler. He was telling me that a family friend of his was Himmler, who was one of Hitler's most ghastly murderers. He was the right-hand man, second in command with a few others. He was telling that this man appeared when he wasn't actually doing his work of massacring innocent people. He was very cultured. He dressed as a very cultured gentleman. He was a connoisseur of fine arts, a patron of theater, classical music, poetry. He had very, very superfine mannerisms in a social environment. He just looked like the ideal cultured gentleman. But in his mind, in his actions, he was literally giving orders and making plans to murder and torture ruthlessly millions and millions of innocent men, women, and children. Is that culture? Similarly, in whatever venue of life we may be performing our duties, if we're lying, if we're cheating, if we're hurting others, destroying others' lives, but yet we give in charity, and we have nice mannerisms, and we do yajnas, and we do pujas, is that culture? Real culture is the attitude of the heart, humility, morality, integrity, and compassion to others. In the Christian religion, the golden rule is do unto others as you want them to do to you, which obviously means do not do to others what you would not want anyone else to do to you. This is a universal principle. And in the Vedic literatures, it is developed so scientifically, so philosophically, with such profound substance. Real culture is to follow in the footsteps of great personalities. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells, through Arjuna, the whole world. Yad yad acharati sthrestas tad tad evitaro janasya yat pramanam kurite lokas tadanuvartate. That what great people do, the common people will follow. Whatever example they set by their exemplary acts, the whole world will pursue that. It is a fact. Who does society put on the altar of greatness? That is a barometer of the integrity of a society. Previously, the great personalities were the rishis, the sages. Whether they were business people, or whether they were agriculturalists, or whether they were kings, a person who actually lived by the highest principles of spirituality and morality, they were considered great. People who were very learned in the science of real knowledge, they were considered great. And the common people and the children, they wanted to be like them. Today, the great leaders are cinema stars, television stars, sports stars, wealthy people who have lots of money and lots of power. Politicians sometimes. But the question is, what is their integrity? There's nothing wrong with taking the role of any of these occupations. But what is the lifestyle? What are the values that such leaders have and they demonstrate to the world? The world will pursue it. When I was a young boy in the 1950s and 60s in the United States of America, James Bond was the best hero amongst the young generation. You've heard of him? And there was all these movies. And he was having sexual relations so many times, and he was killing so many people, and he was drinking, and he was smoking cigarettes. And that's what all the children wanted to do. Even before they knew what it was, they wanted to have affairs with ladies or men. Even before they knew, they would steal cigarettes from there and put it in their mouth just like Mr. Bond would, like this. People follow leaders. The greatest need in the world today is responsible leaders who could lead people with real integrity. Culture is based around compassion and enlightenment. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells that what great people do, common people will follow. And he gives an example of Maharaj Janak. Janak was the father of Sita, the father-in-law of Ram, and the king of Mithila. In the Puranas, there's a beautiful story about Maharaj Janak, which is one out of countless examples that he showed to the world of selfless service to others. That is real virtue. That is real wealth. When we have the disposition of selfless service for the welfare of others. Janak, when he was to close the chapter of his particular lifetime, by his yogic powers, he left his physical body, and a viman, a carrier, came to bring him to heaven, to the spiritual worlds. And on the way, he passed Yamaloka, or Kalaloka. And there he saw people suffering the torments of hellish conditions. They were screaming, they were crying, and he took such pity on them, he actually stopped there at the gate of hell to see them. And because of his purity, his compassion, and his piety, just the air that touched him, when it touched those people in their hellish sufferings, they felt great relief. And he prayed for them. And then he was about to continue to heaven, to the spiritual world, where he was going to get all the results of all of his good karmas and all of his devotion to God. But the people were weeping and crying. They were saying, "No, no, please do not leave us. You're giving us relief. As long as you're here, we're feeling some hope. We're feeling some shelter. Otherwise, we're totally lost. Please stay with us." Now, what was the compassion? What was the integrity of Janak? That if I can help these people, I will stay here. He actually made up his mind to stay there permanently and live in hell with them. Although he already has a ticket back to the kingdom of God. He was on his way. This was his spirit. And then Yamaraj said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "You're not supposed to be here. You're the most pious religious man in all of earth. You're meant to go to the kingdom of God, to heavens. Why are you here?" He said, "Because I cannot leave these people. They're suffering. And they want my help. I cannot turn them away. I will remain here." And then Yamaraj started saying, "Do you know why these people are here?" And he started explaining the horrible criminal activities that each one was doing. They were murderers. They were rapists. They were plunderers. But he had compassion for them. He saw within their hearts is the eternal soul. He saw that every living being is essentially my brothers and sisters. I'm responsible to help them, even if it means I live in hell forever. So Yamaraj was really trying to convince him, "You should go. You don't belong in this place." And he said, Yamaraj said, "If you just give the credits of your devotion and your pious acts to these people, I will liberate them." So early one morning, Janak Maharaj, with a completely clean, pure heart, lovingly chanted the holy name of Ram with the prayer to deliver them. And they were all delivered. That is the power of the holy name when it is chanted by one with a pure heart. So when Krishna tells in Gita to all the world that if you want to be successful in life, you have to follow proper leaders. And if you're a leader, you have to follow proper leaders. A leader is one who follows proper leaders. And Janak Maharaj is an example of leader. One who selflessly, with the spirit of compassion, lived for the welfare of others. Integrity means to live by the principles that we hold sacred at any cost. Because the nature of this world, especially in this age of Kali, is there will be so many temptations and so many fears that will come into our lives. we can gain so much if we just compromise our principles. Or we may lose so much if we do not compromise our principles. But our principles are the most sacred wealth that we have in our life. If we lose our values, we lose the very substance of our souls. That understanding is Vedic culture. And there are so many great personalities who exemplify that. Yudhisthira Maharaj, Ranti Dev, Prataparudra Maharaj. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains, Atapum Vyadvijastrestas Varana Swami Vibhagasha Swanushtatasya Dharmasya Samsadira Haditoshanam. Whatever our occupation may be, whatever our status of life may be, whether we are sadhus or householders, whether we're politicians or field workers or business people or teachers or students, that is not really what is important. What is important is that through our actions, samsiddhir haritoshanam, we please Krishna. We please the Supreme Lord through our integrity and through our devotion. That is the real success of life. And that spirit, that example, is so greatly needed in the world today. What is the highest benediction that the great souls ask for when they approach God and their seniors? What did Dhruva Maharaj ask for when he was standing before the Lord? What did Prahlad Maharaj ask for when he was standing before the Lord? What did King Prataparudra ask for when he was in the presence of God? All of these great personalities, by their example, ask for the same thing. The greatest benediction is, my Lord, let me never forget you and always remember you. And let my only aspiration for all of eternity be to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of all of your servants. And let me live in a spirit of compassion to all. Prahlad Maharaj begged, let me always remember you. And as long as anyone is suffering in this world, I don't want to go to the kingdom of God. Let me be here to help them as their servant. Not as their master, but as their servant. Our beloved Guru Maharaj, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, taught that the real master is the person who considers himself the servant of everyone. It is that quality that attracts people with good consciousness to want to accept them as master. The greatest power is the power of God. And that power is not accessed by any material consideration. It is accessed through our humility, our compassion, and our devotion. And our acting exemplary for others. Rupa Goswami described, Prapanchakatiya Budya Hari Sambandhi Vastuna Mumukshami Paratyago Vairabgam Vairagyam Palgu Katyate. That the real spirit of detachment is not to give things up, but to utilize everything that God has given us for the highest purposes. Our beloved Guru Maharaj, he was born in Calcutta. He lived as a family person for many years. In fact, he had a pharmaceutical business. He was a pharmacist. He had a shop. very much in this line for many years. In fact, he had a chemist shop in Calcutta, in Allahabad, and for many years in Bombay, just near Grant Road. But all the while, he was performing his duties in a spirit of devotion, with a spirit of trying to be instrumental in his guru's mission to give the love of God to the world. And he was in every possible way utilizing his energies in that way. And when his children grew up, he retired and went to Vrindavan, and then ultimately went to the West. Now, most people from India go to the West because they want money. Yes? That's my understanding from analyzing the situation nicely. People usually go to the West to take, not to give. He went on a cargo ship with only 40 rupees and risked his life at the age of 70. And he said, "I have not come to take anything from any of you. I've come to give." And one newspaper reporter said, "What do you? You have nothing. What have you come to give us? We're the most powerful, wealthy country in the entire world, and you're just a monk, a sannyasi, with just two sets of simple clothes and a box of books and some beads. What have you come to give us?" He said, "I have come to give you what you have forgotten, the real treasure that is within your heart, the treasure of your relationship with God, the treasure of knowledge of your eternal soul, which is full of knowledge and full of bliss." Yes, Prabhupada exported the supreme, most precious wealth of India and went around the world 13 times distributing it and transformed millions of people's hearts. People who didn't even know what morality was, living by high ethics and principles. And Srila Prabhupada, after observing things very nicely, he gave a very nice realization. He said, especially back in those days, he said, India is like a layman that has excellent vision. And the West, countries like America, is like a blind man with very, very strong legs. The wealth, the technology, the science of the West, very powerful. But they practically have no vision. Practically blind to morality and true spiritual principles. But India, such a heritage of rishis and sages, such deep philosophical works. It's a culture based on spirituality, believe it or not. The whole Indian culture is based on spiritual principles since time immemorial. Such vision. Srila Prabhupada said, what will actually do the greatest benefit for all humanity throughout the world is when we combine the two. When the blind man puts the lame man on his shoulders, then one will give vision and one will give physical strength. So when the blind and the lame come together, they could both offset the other's deficiencies and do tremendous things together. So Western technology, Western science, Western economic growth, combined with the culture and the vision and the wisdom of India, can do the greatest benefit for all humanity. And I'm so happy to see that the Piramal family is trying to incorporate this principle of taking the latest, highest technologies of the West and trying to combine it with the vision, the wisdom, the sensitivity, and the principles and philosophies of the great Indian Vedic culture. It is a wonderful thing, and it brings us great hope and great joy as well. Previously, just 500 years ago, India was considered the wealthiest country in the world. Do you know how America was discovered by the white Europeans? Christopher Columbus, who was from Genoa in Italy, he was working for the Queen of Spain, and everyone in Europe knew that the power and the influence of their nations was very much dependent on their access to India, because India had such wealth of jewels and spices and metals and so many other silks. So he decided that instead of going all the way, you know, around Africa, the world is round. I'm just going to go the opposite direction of everyone else, and I'm going to get to India first. Very short access to India. To get the riches of India. And these were material riches. But somehow or other, by accident, he ran into what we call today America. And when he met the people, he called them Indians, because he thought he was in India. So yes, it is a testimony of what the culture of India was in the past. It was full of both spiritual, material, and social, cultural opulences. But over the centuries, so much plundered. Plundered of their wealth, plundered of their integrity. And today, more than ever before, being plundered of the one thing that they have, that the world needs most, their spirituality. It's a crime. I was born and raised in America. And I knew always that if you want to understand the highest spiritual principles, you have to go to India. In fact, there was a Chinese professor who wrote a book. It was a course in New York, major university, and all over the world. And in this book, this Chinese professor of religion, he said, if you want to understand religion, you have to go to India. Personally, I didn't have funds. I hitchhiked, standing on the road, asking people to drive me from London. And I went through all of Europe and through the whole Middle East, Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan. It took me 6 months to reach India. That's how much an American boy from an upper middle class family was longing and searching for the wealth of India. I wasn't coming to get a job. I was coming to find this great wealth of the scriptures and the sages and the rishis, because I knew nothing else could make us happy. So it is such a refreshing, wonderful joy to my heart to see how the Piramal family is, in a very honorable and sincere way, trying to really live by traditional moral and spiritual principles. Proud of the great heritage of India, and trying to take the essence of that heritage and incorporate it right into the main veins of the world's industry and technology. For this I thank you sincerely from my heart. Recently, there has been a very great catastrophe this earthquake that took place outside of Indonesia created tidal waves that have devastated hundreds and thousands of people's lives, their wealth. It brings about many feelings in sincere people's hearts. One is, what can we do to help those people who are suffering so tragically? It's a great sorrow, and we should all be praying for them and doing what we can to help. To love God means to help those in need. Another thing that we can contemplate is how temporary life is. We don't know when that wave is going to come upon us. So what's really so important is how we live. How we are preparing the soul, not only in this life, but beyond. Another thought I had was how the tidal wave of ignorance, the tsunami of ignorance of the self, has crashed upon the shore of humanity. The fundamental teaching of Gita is you are not this body, you are the eternal soul. Dehino smenyata dehe komaram yoganam chara tata dehantara prapya dhirastatra namugyate. As the soul or the consciousness passes from boyhood to youth to old age, at the time of death, the soul will pass into another body according to our actions, our thoughts, and desires. The soul is eternal. The soul is part of God. To understand the nature of the soul and to live according to the nature of who we really are is real knowledge. But due to ignorance, due to this massive tidal wave of ignorance, it has literally crushed and devastated to such a large extent the ethics, the morality, and the spiritual principles of humanity all over the world. On every level, there is need for mass relief within this world. Not only relief for those who are suffering physically, but those who need enlightenment desperately. There is a beautiful sloka in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Tasmad sankirtanam Vishno jagan mangalamang hasam mahatam apikoravya vijay kantakraniskritam. And I would like to end my small talk with this verse. We have performed the yajna, and along with the yajna, the chanting of God's holy names. The translation of this beautiful verse is that the chanting of the holy names of the Lord is the most auspicious activity. It goes on to explain, by the congregational chanting of God's names, it uproots the sinful tendencies within people's hearts, uproots the evil, the envious, the egoistic tendencies within the heart. And therefore, the chanting of the holy names of the Lord is the supreme, most auspicious activity in the entire universe. I thank Ajay, Swati, Urvi, Lalita Devi, and Anand and all family who is gathered today for giving this beautiful example to the world. By beginning the use of this wonderful, wonderful facility given by God, by invoking the highest auspiciousness. And I sincerely pray from my heart that the supreme blessings of Sri Radha and Krishna and all the great sages shower upon you in your efforts, and that you and your families could live together happily as examples to give the whole world what is most desperately needed. Leaders with spiritual and moral integrity. And that your wonderful business may prosper as a vehicle to offer that service to humanity. Thank you very much.